Yeah, usually I give this talk in the middle of the week. By then everyone is tired. So the nice thing about a visual diagnosis is that this is what we all do. And you know, to take notes, this is sort of for fun. How many people, is this your first time for this conference? Oh, good, good. You're gonna find that the conference is a lot of fun. The main thing about this is it's not a hardcore conference. There are lots of speakers who have done this many, many times, and we come up here and just have a blast. So this is really to honor you all and all of us who work in emergency medicine. We practice, and in practicing medicine, we see stuff. So what I'm going to do is just kind of review some of the fun things that we do see in the ED. One of the best seers, so to speak, was William Osler. Interesting guy. He was kind of a jerk. We remember these things, the little heuristics. When we think of Osler nodes, you know, those little painful things, because we were taught that Osler was a real bastard. But one of the things about him, though, it's like The House, if you've ever watched that show. I guess House was modeled after Osler. But one of the things that he had always said, and you can read this here, that really, you have to be there. You have to experience it. So as Ryan said, you know, treat the patient in front of you. There, I said it. It's a third. There we go. I got a fist pump on that one. So it's true. And when you see things in this particular lecture, I'm trying to get all of the senses. I still can't get smell, but I got the other ones all in this. But remember, the patient in front of you, Osler would always tell you, is going to tell you his or her diagnosis. So we'll get started. Some of these you're going to even know just by the line. 26-year-old, right upper quadrant pain, recent PID. You just yell it out if you want to, because this is that type of conference. Oh, man. Okay, so you have your CT scan. You see some little smudging, granularity up top there. And what we're looking at is perihepatic adhesions and fibrosing of the liver. So yes, Fitzhugh Curtis syndrome. So this was two guys, a Fitzhugh and a Curtis, back in the early 1930s, and they first looked at that. Do you remember violin stringing, that we used to learn what those things look like? So this is what that looks like in a laparoscope. You're gonna see actually adhesions from the liver on down. You can imagine how painful that must be. Okay. These next two are kind of cool because, like Jim, and I'm not going to out you as being an old guy, but I think I'm the same age as you, so I'm going to call myself old, and that's all we have to say. But these next two cases are really entered into our boards and what we saw only in the last 40 years. So it's interesting. Some of these are sort of new. They came from the 80s. So that's your hint for this one. 45-year-old with chest pain, transient and tropes are negative. Wellens, you guys got this. This is good. How do you know it's Wellens? Yeah, so Wellens is something that was first discovered, it's really described, and I'm sure it was discovered before, but it was described in the early 80s. This is a critical LAD lesion in the anterior leads. So this is the up and down, okay? And these biphasic T waves have almost a 92% specificity for this. Now, the thing about Wellens disease, though, these are not the folks that you want to put on the treadmill, because it's a high LAD lesion. You put these folks on the treadmill, and then you're going to be getting a call from the treadmill that says you need to, or worse, you'll hear a code overhead, and you're going to go down and respond to that. So you do not stress them. This is a cath, and early revascularization is recommended in this group. These are your leads, and you'll notice in the anterior leads that up and down, it's these deep T-wave inversions are seen. Okay, now, you get the other one. 18-year-old, so you got a youngin, sent in the ED for the routine physical exam by his coach. All right, he feels great. Top basketball player. But he tells the coach that, you know, occasionally I get a little dizzy sometimes. I passed out just one time, but it was no big deal. only had a brother who died at age 10. Okay, here's his EKG. All right. Kind of similar to the LAD lesion, because you see an up and down, but what clues are concerning? Brugada. Okay, excellent. This is the Brugada syndrome. Now you remember Brugada also in the V1 and V2 lades. This looks like a ski slope. The way I can remember it is that 18-year-olds are athletic, they like to ski. You look at this and you see a young person with this. This is interesting. This is not a vascular stenotic disease. Unfortunately, this is a dominant mutation, so that's where the brother died. This was a disease of children, and the 18, 20-year-olds, 21-year-olds, Len Bias, this was my age, and I grew up in New England, so the Boston Celtics, biggest prospect ever in his age, dropped dead. I think it was this. Okay, sudden adult cardiac death and sudden death in teenagers was found. The sleeping sickness, but the history is the key. Often family members are going to be seen. This is sodium channelopathy, so this is different. This person, a stress test might be normal, which is interesting. But when they go into a cardiac dysrhythmia, they need an implantable defibrillator or they're not going to do well. Class 1 dregs, flecainide is the treatment that's recommended if they survive to come into the ED. All right, the painful eye, unilateral painful eye. You're using your visuals on this one. You all are saying it, so I'm just going to put that out there. This is the herpes simplex, one side of the face along a nerve. You're going to see this on your fluorescein. And what makes this different, how you can separate this from varicella, is that you'll see in the green areas here, you're going to see the bulbs that are different. You won't necessarily see that these terminal bulbs in zoster. In fact, you don't. So this is one of the big things. It's a linear defect you're going to see, and it's surrounded by these edematous cells. Okay. Now you've got this one here. Got some antibiotics. Turn bright red. Red man. Oh, this is a red man. So it's a red man syndrome. Okay, red man syndrome. So what is red man syndrome? Anybody remember what antibiotics? It's your bonus question. What antibiotics is it first really described a lot? Vancomycin. So from Jim's talk with procalcitonin, you know, calcitonin's up, procal's up, give some vanc, get a red man. So this is different than an anaphylactic, and it's different than it's an anaphylactoid reaction. It's a release of mast cells. It is some IgE related, but you can just stop the drug and this will most likely go away, and it's related to the infusion rate. I love the colors in a visual diagnosis talk. And we talked about that. Okay, so going on that motion, this is a person who's taken medicine for body ailments. All right, didn't notice any changes till his friend said, "Dude, you look like Papa Smurf." All right, not the Blue Man Group, but this guy. Okay, so this guy took it for his arthritis, says it helped with his respiratory symptoms. He took it for years. He died from this in the 90s. Silver. So if you ever see the blue man coming in, not the red man, but the blue, this is silver toxicity. Sadly, though, for all those folks who are out there, those vitamin people, I don't know if you have any West Coast people coming in, that's just a sip of bust, but the silver, these heavy metals can be very toxic. But this is an example. It's a great thing. Colloidal silver, take it. It rescues you. It's the greatest thing in the world. Don't become a Papa Smurf on this. Okay, now we move into the youngins a little bit, the eight-year-olds. An eight-year-old with a fever or rash after an upper respiratory infection. That's a big differential. Anyone who takes care of lots of peds, every time you see fever and rash, I'm like, oh my God, what's my differential? It takes forever. Okay, there he is. Still looks like any viral program, so what's it gonna be? And then the mom says, you know, you don't have to call Child Protective Services for me. I did not slap this kid's face. Ah, all right, slap cheek. Well, this is Fitz disease. All right, remember that parvo B19? Slap cheek appearance. Erythematous, maculopapular, but it fades. They have a high fever, it's self-limited, and it fades. Well, I got another one with a rash that just came in room two. Brassy cough. I don't really know what brassy cough means, but when I think of it, I think something, you know. Runny nose, or runny eyes and nose, conjunctivitis, photophobia. But then you look in the mouth and it's a white spot, something you didn't see in the other character in room one, but in this one. Maculopapular, small. Any thoughts? I'm gonna throw a picture up there. Didn't think you really needed a visual in this one, but I'm gonna throw it to you. Use one of these. Oops. Maybe one of these. Maybe a clue, unvaccinated. It's already been yelled out, so I'm not saving it. But nose and eyes running, and then the C's. Has a cough, the complex, coryza, conjunctivitis. This is measles, otherwise known as first disease. So the difference is you have some tongue fine, it's mucosa. So what's up with the numbers? Well, we used to number them. So first disease is the measles. It's also hard measles, 14 days measles, morbilli. That was all the different names back in the day. Second disease is scarlet fever. And the etiology you'll see in this is strep. Third disease was German measles. So if you ever have an old person say I had third disease when I was young, that's the rubella. Fourth disease is thought to have been staph. Not so sure, but that's the, as listed, also known as the Philetau-Dux disease, but we see some of the staphylococcal diseases listed under that. Fifth disease we talked about, the parvovirus B19. And sixth disease is roseola. So sixth disease is the roseola. All of these come in a different flavor, but the numbers at one point used to be kind of helpful. Okay, 45-year-old, at a college reunion, playing some ball just like the good old times, and then came down on this and pop, what happened? Skiing, but you had a ski boot on though, but then you were so happy you got out of your ski boot and jumped off the stage, and then that happened, same deal. If you know, next year I'm gonna put that in there. He was taking a fluoroquinolone. Excellent, Achilles tendon rupture. And your MRI will help you, or x-rays can often see some bunching, but these days ultrasound is, I don't know if Dr. Fox is here, but we will definitely be talking about how the ultrasound can diagnose just about anything this day, but this will pick up on that as well. Okay, football injury. Stepped on during play. Guy was moving forward, he got stepped right on the anterior part of the foot. That's your clue. And the ligament diagonally connects the first medial cuneiform to the second. What is this? That's your Lisfranc fracture dislocation. So this guy, Jacques Lisfranc, was around Napoleon's time. And what's interesting is we all talk about, oh, it's a Lisfranc fracture dislocation. We're going to repair that. It's almost always operative. Lisfranc, ironically, had no intention of doing any repairs on this. In Napoleon's army, he described this as a way to disarticulate the first and second toes in an amputation process in the cold. So that's kind of a cool factoid that, so the original Liz Frank was like, hey, figuring out how to way to take that first toe off. But today we repair these things. Okay, back to the kids. Abdominal pain and vomiting in a two-year-old. Okay, sometimes when we do the kid x-rays, you get pretty much the whole kid in the x-ray. And in this particular one, the same thing. But you'll notice how half the size, half of the body has bowel and the other one doesn't seem to. When you see something like this, what do you need more history in this? It's got a tender right upper quadrant mass, he sees. It's distended, hypoactive, heme negative. Any thoughts? Intussusception. All right, so intussusception. What do we use now to really take a look into intussusception? Ultrasound. Good, good. So the ultrasound is going to show a target outer ring and a target inner ring. Outstanding. Again, it's great to have this device with you. But this is intussusception. So, again, we're all become great observers. We've all become great clinicians, practitioners, or those who use your senses. I mean, all of your senses. You can hear the screaming of someone who's in significant pain. You can smell Pseudomonas, GI bleeds, just about lots of things. You can, good chunky abscess or neck fash. You don't even need to go in the room. You can be like, I know I'm in trouble here. An old person with a UTI. Use your senses. Osler would say that. But one of my other favorite people who was the master of the obvious was Yogi Berra, too. So I'm going to think of some other things that maybe Yogi would have said, too. I'm not sure who was better at visual diagnosis, but both of these people could really say it as it was. Posterior cervical pain in this patient, 30-year-old with fever, neck pain, difficulty flexing 3 days after delivery with an epidural. And there's your CT, or your MRI, I'm sorry. Had an elevated white count and a high protein. So this is your spinal epidural abscess. You're going to see the hyperattenuated part along the spinal cord, the whitish as it comes down through. If you see that, you're done right there. But mostly, if you work yourself backwards and you look at the white count, you look at the fever, and you look at the patient, you'll probably make that diagnosis before you even get to here. Key finding, 12-year-old. That's probably your key finding right there with a knee problem. Okay, what are we looking at? Osgood Schlatter. How do you know? No, you're absolutely right. And what it is this growth, as it comes through, becomes a little unstable in the tibial tubercle. It's prominent. About 70% of them can be bilateral as well. So the 12-year-old who has worsening knee extension, it's a growth issue. You look at this. Now you got, I'll go to this next one. 25-year-old, neck swelling, trismus, dysphagia, difficulty breathing, had a peritonsillar abscess 2 months ago with teeth extracted, dental caries. Now he comes in with frank pus in the oral cavity, erythema, induration, he's gurgling. Okay. You don't need a visual diagnosis for this, but what are you going to do next?
Call ENT.
Call ENT? You could call ENT. But I think by the time ENT finishes in their black tie event and they're feeling mighty nice and their show's done, this is one that we all know. When the nurse or your resident or your APP or anyone else but you says this script to you, this is where you put down anything that's in your hand and kind of run in and see what this is. This is airway management. So this is the nice thing that sometimes the clues don't have to be visual, but audio. When someone were to say this to me, I'm like, ooh, I gotta go check this out. This is what you would look post-intubation. And what you're seeing is gas in these areas. And it was all from the odontogenic area. This is an infection of the mouth soft tissue that tracked down and through to the chest. I heard the ouch on that one. I hate these CTs when you see them too. There's gas in the mediastinal area. This is necrotizing mediastinitis. That chest pain, the gurgling, unable to get stuff. You knew you had a soft skin and soft tissue, but a deep penetrating infection in here. And as everyone would say, that the first thing you do is manage that airway. Okay. The clues come in a row. Spent 12 months living in Asia. 20-year-old woman. Cough, fever, weight loss. And you know in Asia, this is not going to be some keto diet. She's a drug user. And a prostitute. And now she's a prisoner. Do I even need to put up a chest x-ray right now? But I'm going to do that. What's the diagnosis? COVID. One COVID. I just wanted to remind you all that there's life coming after COVID. We get back to our good old measles and tuberculosis and all the other good stuff here. So this is pulmonary tuberculosis. All right. 29-year-old college student with a fever. 103. Stiff neck, photophobia, palpable petechial rash. Now, I'm going to call it a he. He's sitting there, and his girlfriend comes over with this shot glass, because they're college kids, and goes, hey, check it out. When I roll it on this, I can see right through that. It doesn't blanch. What's the key visual clue to that? Not being able to blanch. So I want to say that we all now have visual cues we're going to walk away from. We have our cup, and you've got your glass, so you'll be able to use this, not to say that you want to bring this into the ED, but the non-blanching petechial rash is the clue. Yogi Berra can say you can observe a lot just by watching. So what I find interesting, this is meningitis, Neisseria. The English were outstanding about this. The UK created a campaign on this to do the tumbler test. Who else would be carrying around a tumbler all the time? But I think that's fantastic. It's part of a medical instrument for us too. So you do the tumbler test. If there's a rash in this campaign that went out in the UK, if it does fade, it's not likely to be meningitis. They even send it out to the kids, too. Maybe start the kids early on the tumblers. So that was outstanding. I have to review this. So I'll share with you as well. Do you remember the different names? I mean, oh, why the dermatology career pays so well? Because they have to remember a lot of different terms that you wouldn't use in your normal vernacular, but that's what we're going to use today. Petechiae is something very small. Purpura is medium size, and ecchymosis is the largest. There is a way, an algorithm I use, and you see it here. So you get a petechial purpural rash that comes in. The first question you ask yourself, is it a fever? Yes or no? And does it have a special finding? Is it palpable or not palpable? And from that, you can work your way right through the most common organisms or diseases that may come from that. In this particular case, the petechial purpural rash with a fever and palpable findings is the worst. The disseminated GC, meningococcemia, endocarditis, Rocky Mountain spotted fever can present like this as well. And HSP can present with or without palpable the palpable rash. So these are the different types of rashes, as you see, the petechial purpuric rash and why they're so serious. The differentials you'll see here, they're hemorrhagic, meningococcemia, endocarditis might have those painful nodes we talked about, Rocky Mountain spotted fever, non-pruritic, but the macules on the wrists and the forearms. And in HSP, when I see a rash in kids, you always consider this as a vascular palpable purpura. It does not blanch, press on that. And it's associated with GI and joint pain. The non-palpable petechial or purpuric rashes is TTP. And then DIC, which is also mostly a gram-negative sepsis, are the ones that are when they come in febrile, but you don't have a non-palpable rash. And HSP can be in both. And this is what you would probably see, that reddish-looking, non-palpable. It's kind of confluent, but it looks fiery. This is the purpura, an example of this in DIC. This is probably one of the worst rashes that you'd never want to see. And HSP, those blotchy ones, it's an anaphylactoid purpura that you'll see with these small. Okay, I'm right on time. So this is the last one, but this one I wanted to share because this one I did a few years ago and it was a winner with the crowd. But what's interesting is we have these patients. And what I found interesting about this is in this video, I'm about to show you, just listen in the background, because although the person doesn't sound like a physician in the background, she's clearly making the diagnosis.
Next stop, Churchill Station.
I added click to add title because I didn't even know what to do with this. This is just too good.
Whoa, chill, whoa, shit. Hey, she's probably fucking possessed. No, she's probably just...
What the fuck are you doing? What the fuck are you doing, man? I didn't tell you.
Call, fuck, yo. Call emergency, shit, dog.
Call emergency.
Hey, stop. Oh, my God. Yeah,
Nah, I'm playing on that, boy.
Sit down. Everyone sit down.
What the fuck?
Put your hand behind your back. Do it now.
Yeah, I think she's
back.
Drugged out, man.
On your belly.
I think, no.
All right. I think she's possessed. I love that, but I think she's drugged out. She's right. Call the ER, and that's what happens. We see these folks coming in all the time, unfortunately. I'm down in Texas, and no matter where you are, you're going to see this. And following Ryan's lecture, I think it's important to realize that. I wasn't making fun of this, but this is truly an issue that you've got to bring in nurses. You don't want your staff getting hurt. You don't want any of the other patients getting hurt, or damage to the property or yourselves. What is this? Meth. It's like that. These are the bath salts, cathinone. So cathinone is a meth-like substance that comes from the cat plant, it's a naturally existing plant, but synthetic cathinones is what we used to call bath salts. Now they have a lot of different names on the street, but it's a very quick-acting substance. It causes a quick change. It lasts for a relatively short period of time. We all know this. What do you guys use to treat this when they come in? Benzos. Simple treatment for a simple drug. So just be careful with that. This is for our matter in our ED, I work in the county hospital. We see quite a few of these folks. Protect them because they can hurt themselves until they get through this. Hydration and benzos, and then we'll get through this. Well, that's it for this talk. I hope you enjoyed that. It's a little visual. Any questions? All right. Well, thanks again. I appreciate that.